Shishuku Vacha. Shishukadev Goswami said, Iti, thus, samabihita, completely instructed. Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, Bhagavataha, of the most powerful Lord Brahma, Sri Bhuvana, of the three worlds, Guru, the spiritual master, Anushasanam, the order, Atmanaha, of himself, Lakutya, because of inferiority, Avanata, bowed down, Shirodaraha, his head, Vadam, yes, sir. Iti, thus. Sabahu manam, with great respect. Uvaha, carried out. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, after thus being fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. Purport. Sri Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and therefore, according to social etiquette, his position was inferior. It's the duty of the inferior to carry out the order of the superior with great respect. Priyavrata therefore immediately said, yes, sir, I shall carry out your order. Priyavrata is described as a Mahabhagavata, a great devotee. The duty of a great devotee is to carry out the order of the spiritual master, or the spiritual master of the spiritual master in the parampara system. As described in Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara pratyam, one has to receive the instructions of the Supreme Lord through the disciplined chain of spiritual masters. A devotee of the Lord always considers himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Dasana das. Translation, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, after thus being fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrat, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. Om Gyana Tramandasya Gana Gana Shalakaya Shakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Grave Namaha. Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes blinded with the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. Okay. You know, basic ABCs of spiritual life, taking the instructions of the spiritual master as one's heart and soul. Nothing unfamiliar to most of the devotees here, I'm sure. It's just a question of getting off the bodily platform in many instances and becoming aware of the fact that inferior does not refer to anything to do with the nature of the qualities of the soul. It was a bastardization of the system of varna and ashram that became the caste system many thousands of years ago here in Bhardvarsh, where this idea of inferiority was related to the concept not of the quality of the soul, but of the nature of hierarchy, of being born to a particular type of family, to a relationship to the body. Fortunately for us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his great social revolution was in a completely liberating us from the idea that birth, janma, was our qualification. And that's why I can sit here today. Because Srila Prabhupada carried that message to the most fallen yavanas and malechas in the West. And we're still trying to throw off these bad habits. In fact, if you look in a dictionary, you shall not find the word obeisances. It just only exists in the understanding that Prabhupada has given it to us in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other literatures. It doesn't have any definition in the English language. You can't find it in the dictionary. Has anyone ever tried to find this word in a dictionary? I've looked it up in the most unabridged dictionaries. It's not there. So, the understanding of what is an obeisance, how do we offer, what does actually the word mean? Does it just mean that we're lying like a stick on the ground? No, it's actually a completely spiritual term. It deals with the understanding of our position as a soul caught, imprisoned in the material body, and the nature of how we can become liberated. It is a spiritually oriented word. We don't bow. Bowing relates to the body. We give obeisances. We give our respect. And along with that respect, we develop, from following this methodology, love. How is that possible? And where is the line between respect and love? It is very blurred, because as one develops a appreciation for great souls, like we have developed some appreciation, a little, tiny bit in the case of myself, for Srila Prabhupada, and for his followers, who have carried forward his mission to the best of their bases, of their best of their obeisances and the best of their abilities, we have a sense, by offering obeisances, of gaining a sense of affection on the spiritual platform. I have many differences with numerous God brothers and God sisters. But those differences pale in relation to how much respect I have for their continued service to Srila Prabhupada. I have many differences with many grand disciples in terms of how they behave, what they do. But I have enormous respect and affection because they are serving so nicely. They're so sincerely attempting to make their spiritual master pleased. And in turn, that spiritual master is trying the best he or she can to make his spiritual master pleased. And in that way, we are, by offering obeisances, offering respect, and gaining from that respect affection and love. Because without love, we can't move forward in spiritual life. You can't take and artificially impose an idea that you should love. It doesn't engender any growth, the seed of that bija, that seed of devotion that we have, can really only be watered by our tears of appreciation. So when we are actually understanding the way in which this etiquette of spiritual life operates, which is so beautifully demonstrated to myself, Yadabar, other devotees that come here, by the senior devotees here, we can't help but feel affection for them. It naturally develops. When you're in the ashram, or if you're at home and you're children are disrespectful to you, or your brother or your friend, your devotee friend is disrespectful to you, it's so painful. Why? Because we understand from their disrespect, they're missing the opportunity to develop affection and love. And without affection and love, what's the point? This is not an artificial imposition on the mind, Prabhupada told us. This is a gradual opening of the heart, which is full of love. Love for Krishna and all his parts and parcels. You can't love Krishna without loving his parts and parcels. You can't love his parts and parcels without loving Krishna. So it's a mutual activity that goes on, and it's interchanging. So how do we do that? Well, here in this example, Purvata understands that Lord Brahma is not only his guru, not only his well-wisher in that way, but a soul of such great quality and well-wishing that he can understand that even though he doesn't comprehend why he has to take on this burden of family life, which by nature he doesn't want to accept, still out of that deep respect, he is surrendered and he offers his greatest obeisance to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, by the way, is also within his heart surrendering to Krishna, because Lord Brahma is getting his instruction through the heart. And his heart has to be so pure, except of course when he had some pastime with Krishna Vrindavan. But his heart has to be so pure that he can transmit the very instructions of Krishna for the benefit of Priyavrat. This is how Lord Brahma understood things, because remember, Lord Brahma is the first created being in this particular universe of this Manvantara. He is that person who Krishna directly is giving instruction through to the heart. So he's the first spiritual master who's relating that. And it took not just himself, but as it said here, his Priyavata's father himself couldn't gain enough respect from his son's understanding of his position to convince him, and so he brought in the parampara. He brought in Lord Brahma. No, you really have to hear these words very strongly. Narada wasn't enough. And sometimes for us, we have to hear things from our godbrothers, our temple presidents, even our gurus, even our gurus' representatives, our gurus' godbrothers sometimes, because we're so deaf, we can't get the message so well. So we're so covered by our own material ambitions. And so in this way, we have an example of how we can open those transcendental eardrums by being respectful, by listening in a very surrendered manner and not taking offense, because the offense always relates only to our body. And we learn in the first lesson of spiritual life that we're not the body. This is exhibited a little later on in the fifth canto by the example of Judd Bart, who, when he presented his case to the king, made the point that I can't take offense at your words because I'm not this body. I'm actually a self-realized. He was speaking from his truth, that he understood completely and without any equivocation, and experienced that he was not this body. So therefore, when we're criticized by others, it's such an opportunity to understand that we are being given a small little lesson from the Supreme Person through either guru, representative guru, friend, that they're giving us an opportunity not to take offense, practice not taking offense, because we're not this body, and surrendering to the instruction of the higher authority. This is the essence of our conflicts in ISKCON. So often we have conflicting authorities. We don't know who to listen to. We have the temple authority, we have our guru authority, we have our shastric, what we consider our shastric authority, when we read something, and we have our own conditioned mind. And we have to make distinctions. Which authority am I going to follow? I'll tell you a little story in this regard. When I was in Los Angeles in 1971, my mother was writing a lot of letters to Prabhupada. She was complaining criticizing way to him about how devotees were acting, how her son was being treated, so on and so forth. And it was causing a lot of problems for the temple authorities. So the temple president, Karunda, at that time, he told me I had to leave. I had already been practicing as a devotee for 1 year. And I'd always said yes to authorities. Whatever they say, I say yes to it. But in this case, I was very worried because I hadn't been initiated yet, and I didn't want to leave the temple if I wasn't initiated. And so I said to myself, I can't leave, I'm not initiated. And he says, no, you have to go. Your mother's causing difficulties, and she's writing a lot of letters, but you have to leave. And I took all the courage I had, but I respectfully submitted that really, I really need to be initiated. You know, I don't want to lose the opportunity for that once in a many, many, many millions of lifetimes opportunity. And so he went to Srila Prabhupada. The next morning, Prabhupada called me to his quarters. And he initiated me in his quarters. Now, you may wonder, why do I bring that when I'm talking about authority and respect and obeisances and surrender? Here's an example of where I respectfully said no to an authority. Why? How is that possible? And here we have such a great soul as Prabhupada, and he's accepting something which seems to be in direct violation of what is recommended for spiritual life, to accept austerity and not take on family life. So in his mind, he has to be wondering, what's my dad telling me? Right? Makes no sense. But the authority has to be pure. That's why we have Lord Brahma come in. We have to at least perceive the authority as pure. Otherwise, we have to respectfully make our case. If there's some difficulty, we can't just be blind followers. We can't say, well, you're obviously representing Krishna's words just because someone's in a certain position. No, that's not what we're saying. Because who can amongst us can say we're 100% representing Krishna's words? It's a very difficult thing to say. So this is a razor's edge. This is why we always have some issues in temples. Do I follow authority? Don't I follow authority? How respectful I have to be, that is never a question. Whether I have to obey or not obey, that's always going to be a question. And so much depends. We have to really pray to Krishna, pray to our spiritual master for good guidance in this area, so that we're not guilty of blind following, which is condemned. Prabhupada's purport, he condemns it in chapter 4, verse 34, when he just talks about trying to approach a spiritual master. He condemns blind following in the purport. We have to question. That's our job. We're cholas, we're students on the path, isn't it? But at the same time, we can't be silly, we can't be frivolous. We have to do it in a very respectful way. Some of us will make decisions that will take us to other temples or other places. We don't know if we disagree what Krishna's plan is for us. But at all times, it's in a very respectful mood. This is the point. Because we have to see that every person is trying the best to the of their ability to serve. They also are conditioned, so they're also going to have issues. Now when it comes to our guru, and he gives us instruction, I'll give you an example. Prabhupada told Kamal Krishna Goswami, you go to China and preach for 3 days. Kamal argued with Prabhupada. No, it's not a good idea. I should stay with the Radha Damodar party. I should... We're making so many devotees. Prabhupada, no, Prabhupada, I want you to go to... Prabhupada said, I want you to go to China and preach. But Prabhupada, you know, we're really going to the college towns and we're, you know, so many new bhaktas are coming and we're distributing so many books. No, Prabhupada said, no, I want you to go to China and preach. But Prabhupada, China, no, I don't even know the language in China. I don't want to go to China. China's not... It's a communist country. For 3 days, he argued. To his credit, on the third day, he surrendered. Guru, you surrender. You have to surrender. You've accepted this position. He is my guru. If your guru says, do whatever this person says, now my guru is giving me that instruction, okay. They're obviously empowered by my guru to give me good instruction. But this is the razor's edge of spiritual life. It's where we all, it's where they say the rubber meets the road. Instruction. And accepting and surrendering, and how we do that, and how we handle it when we don't feel that it is actually in our best interest. How we handle that. We have to handle it very carefully. You ever try to catch a bubble? You know, someone blows bubbles. Ever try to catch a bubble in the air? If you touch it too, if you don't just let it land very softly on your hand or your fingers, it'll bust, it'll break. We don't want to break this beautiful, fragile thing. This little creeper, Bhakti Lata Bij, it's just very tender. Just growing in our spiritual advancement. So, in this case, this Bhuvrat, of course, he lived a very long life in householder life. But he never forgot the supreme goal. And at the end of that, eventually you'll find, and as we read through this canto, you'll find the story. You'll find, of course, that he did give up his household life, finally. But not before acting according to these instructions of Krishna through the spiritual master, of benignly ruling a kingdom and creating progeny for this earth, so that there could be many souls to come here, live out their material desires, and then of course in that age, at the end of their lives, go back home, back to Godhead. This was his purpose. This was why he was created. You cannot avoid your duties when given by the spiritual master. You must follow them completely. And sometimes, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, he gave different devotees different types of services, which we could not understand. There's examples of so many people who were told to be, no, you should just stay in this one place and preach. Or you should simply be, no, I don't want you to be going out on book distribution, you should be head pujari. There's many devotees in the beginning that Prabhupada married, who didn't even want to be married. He said, no, I think you two take care of her, and you take care of him. And he made many marriages like that, because he knew that sannyas life was not recommended for this age. Even though he took risks with some of his disciples to do that. But Prabhupada also followed in this example by ordering his disciples to become householders. Now, how did that feel when everything was being preached about the dangers of household life? And here Prabhupada saying, all right, I think you should take care of this Mataji and you should be married to that man, that devotee. I can tell you stories, but I don't want to mention names. So many things happened, and sometimes they didn't work out. Many times they didn't work out, these marriages that were done by Srila Prabhupada in the beginning. How are we to understand that? There's only one way to understand that kind of instruction. that certain, just like Purvata, he had to follow this instruction as a duty. There was a certain unseen hand at work. From the material point of view, it looks like a failure. From some of our marriages in the beginning of Krishna consciousness and so on. But from the spiritual point of view, because they were trying to satisfy Prabhupada, it was successful. Our gurukulas, from the material point of view, many of them look like failures, don't they? So many things happened to them. Oh, it's a terrible idea. But from the spiritual point of view, because everyone was doing what they could do to make them successful, even though so many bad things happened, still, we were successful in attempting to follow the order of the Guru. You cannot fail. I've come to India on an impossible mission. And one devotee, I called him up, a friend of mine, I said, I don't see how we're going to accomplish this goal. It's just impossible from any material point of view. He said, it doesn't matter because the fruits, they don't belong to us. The fruits are always belonging to Krishna. You only have a right to your service, isn't it? Whatever happens. When I look at this temple, and all the years I've been coming here, and I look at Yadavar, who came here when there was no temple, and there was just mosquitoes and many austerities, and people who didn't want us to be here. I think, gosh, the austerities and the fights that went on here and the arguments and all those things, that somehow or another this beautiful worship still goes on today, and this beautiful temple is expanding and sustaining like anything. I have to think to myself, you know, from my mental point of view, all these things were unnecessary. But from the spiritual point of view, it's all glorious. You know, Krishna doesn't see the arguments. He doesn't see the conflicts. He's only looking at the devotion. This is the difference between how Krishna sees things and how we tend to see things. When you're interacting with your God brothers and your God sisters, it's our job to see like Krishna sees, to practice that. We may disagree with them. We may think that they're not preaching exactly correctly. We may have so many fault-finding opinions. But we train ourselves. Thank you very much for sharing, to our mind. We train ourselves. Thank you for sharing, but I'm simply seeing this attempt to serve Prabhupada, serve Guru, serve Krishna. That's what I'm seeing. And the more we practice that, the more the mind comes under control. Just like if you're exercising the body, the more you exercise, the more the body invites you to exercise. Let's go exercise. In the beginning, it's very hard to exercise. But after a while, the body says, hey, you didn't go running today. Let's go running. Or let's do our yoga. Or let's do this. Whatever. Stretches. So similarly, the mind, it's just like a wild animal. It just wants to, you know, like Bhakti Siddhanta said, you have to beat it with a stick. So we have to beat it with the stick of, thanks for sharing, but this is how I'm choosing to see things. The intelligence is always superior to the mind. And when we leave this body, we bring that intelligence, brings that mind with us. We want that mind to be trained so that in our next life we can serve Krishna even better, even more purely. We don't want to bring and drag along or have a mind with us that has so many anarthas. So the way to do that is train it now, and train it by choosing. Know that at every moment you have a choice. At this moment Purvata had this choice. And he accepted the instruction with great respect, because it was practiced. It was the culture. It was the way in which things were done. And we are trying to create a society in which it has that same mood, that we're doing things out of respect, out of affection, out of understanding through higher knowledge. And in that way we're avoiding envy, fear, and all the other unwanted impediments to developing pure love of Krishna and his wonderful devotees. So perhaps you have some questions. We have 5 minutes left. Maharaj.
Prabhupada referred to himself as the Court of Appeal, as the founder, Acharya, and Supreme Director of ISKCON. So, now modern ISKCON is working on some solutions with arbitration and other things, but the simple devotees don't know about all these things. But in this upcoming conference in Mayapur of senior devotees, I'm hoping that some of these things will be addressed, how to develop more and more opportunities for devotees to air concerns and so forth. You understand what I'm saying? To come up with the right balance between Prabhupada's order to follow authority in ISKCON and at the same time protection of individual rights or understanding opportunity to appeal if there's any wrongdoing, etc. So I think this is something that is ISKCON's leadership is sincerely working on, and I hope this conference in Mayapur will be helpful in that regards. But also Prabhupada did, like you're saying, not to follow blindly, because when Bali Mardan deviated in New York, Prabhupada asked, and he was the GBC authority at that time, but he was deviating. And Prabhupada chastised his disciples, why did you not rectify? You know. So there are a lot of desha kalapatra considerations between the necessity for surrender to authority, the necessity for cooperative, working cooperatively and following authority, at the same time, as you mentioned, not being blind. So I think this is something that is an ongoing development project.
Thank you for that comment. I think what's important is always to see the other person as doing the best that they can, even if they're angry, or if they're frustrated, or if they seem like they have some emotional charge on the issue, to see them as doing the best they can for Krishna. If you hold that as the vision of the other person, you can't be offended. You can only be compassionate. And you just go around with that. It's like putting on a pair of glasses of seeing everybody as trying the best that they can. Then you can have your differences, but it doesn't become something where there's fractious fighting or there's hurt feelings or the rest of it. You're just your job as a devotee, our job as devotees, is to become really compassionate and full of affection for the tiniest service that anybody else renders, even if that service is we perceive as imperfect. So that's the trick, and it's not easy. I can say it's not easy for me, and I've been trying to do it for many, many years. I'm very at fault. I can find faults in anybody but myself, practically. So I know it's difficult, but it's absolutely essential for our society to really develop more and more cooperation and advancement. Yes.
You want a question? Yes.
Correction. Oh, as we devotees, sometimes we are arguing for some small things, but it's incomplete. Sometimes we don't have proper communications. So because of communication also, sometimes we don't face each other, or we have come to serve Krishna and that motto doesn't see that we are being loving Krishna. We cannot love that way.
Say the last line again, what?
We want to love Krishna. We have come to serve Krishna and do service to Krishna. But because of some this communication gaps and this one, sometimes we regret to serve properly.
Well, yeah, failure is the pillar of success. I mean, we can fail and then move on. Say we're sorry and rectify it, and that's what we've done in ISKCON for all this time. Thank you very much. If anyone else has any discussion, I'm here. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki.